And mahalo to our underwriters for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And there is a lost dog, location by Sandpiper up in Princeville. And it's a light tan dog, about 1 year of age. It has a blue collar, and it was dragging a leash. If you find or know of this dog, please call Scott, 971-1801. And I have the information here if you need it again. And I must say the views and opinions are those of the speakers. Today we have three, and not of KKCR, its board, its underwriters, its members. And so, good afternoon, Dr. Donna Kaplan.
Good afternoon, Cousin Rich.
And how are you today?
I'm doing really well. How
right
are
on.
You?
I'm doing pretty good.
I think it's the fall equinox today.
Yes,
so
it is.
Happy fall. Happy
yeah,
equinox.
I can't believe it's here already.
Yeah.
And we still have one of our hottest months to go yet.
But we've got some wind back, which is really nice.
Yeah. And Mom and Dad are heading into their beautiful back east New England fall, huh?
They are, but they're headed here.
I know. They're going to miss those change of leaves. And we have a guest, Terry Lilly. Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, it's nice to see you. And so, and we also have a third guest, Stuart Simonson, on calling in. He's a chemical engineer, and Terry Lilly's a biologist. So let me bring on Stuart, okay? Stuart.
Aloha, Stuart.
How are y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Doing
Thank
good.
You.
Thanks for joining us from the East Coast. Where are you now?
Well, I'm in L.A., Lower Alabama today.
Oh.
Lower Alabama, L.A. And is it nighttime there?
It's about 6 p.m.
The sun hasn't set.
Usually when I do a show with Stuart, no kidding, it's in the evening, and then he has to call in the middle of the night, and he does it.
Yeah, this is early.
I know. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much, both of you. I just want to give a little introduction about what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about the potential health and environmental effects of microwave towers, such as what we have here on Kauai. And I first really became aware of the extent of this issue from Terry Lilly, a marine biologist, who, as you know, is here with us. And through Terry, I got connected with Stuart. And I'm just very grateful to have you both here to talk about this really, really important issue.
Yeah, thank you. And you know what I think I'll do is just do a real brief history. Most of the people listening have probably heard of the, quote, Kauai coral disease and some of our reef issues we've been having here on the North Shore of Kauai. And then I'll lead into where I met Stuart and why his information about these microwave radar towers is so vital. But the bottom line is for the last 8 or 9 years, I've done over 1,000 hours of scuba diving along the North Shore of Kauai with my high-definition video camera, doing a nonprofit video series for schools. And in 2012, I started documenting the reefs were dying of some strange-looking disease, all the way from tunnels up to Anini and then down the Nepali coastline. And so I contacted the University of Hawaii, Dr. Greta Abbey, and alerted her of the problem, and Dr. Terry Work from the USGS, and then the folks from NOAA. And subsequently, over the last 3 years, we've documented many, many millions of corals dying along the North Shore of Kauai from this really, really dangerous cyanobacterial disease. We've documented now over 60 dive sites along the North Shore of Kauai, and almost all of them have lost 50 to 75% of their corals in 3 years.
And this is mostly just on the North Shore?
Yeah, this is mostly on the North Shore of Kauai. I was fortunate enough over the last year to get some funding, and I went all throughout the Pacific to Moorea, Bora Bora, Tahiti, Costa Rica, and then in the Bahamas, Exuma and Eleuthera, and all the rest of the other Hawaiian islands to study the reefs and see how many of the corals were dying there and what speed they were dying.
Mm-hmm.
Most people realize we have problems with this warming sea temperatures and higher acid levels, and we have a lot of things bombarding our coral reefs worldwide. But in general, most of the reefs in the Pacific had lost about 0.5% of coral in a year, which is quite a bit. But on the North Shore of Kauai, we lost 20 to 30% of our corals in 1 year. And so this really has brought attention from Scripps Institute, Woods Hole. I've given talks at all these places. I did a National Geographic special on it. We're filming a year-long TV show right now about the issue. And all the scientists together have been bamboozled. We all have no explanation as to why the coral reefs were all dying at about the same time. Mm-hmm. From Nuuloloa all the way down to the Indo-Nepali coast, all the way to Pila'a, and they were dying of these diseases in the healthy areas, like outside Tunnels Reef, and they're also dying in the polluted areas like Hanalei Bay and Inini. But across the board, the corals were dying at a constant rate all up and down the North Shore. We looked at diseases, we did DNA testing. One of the biggest tests that we did with the USGS is we did over 500 coral samples and looked at the immune system of the corals, mm-hmm. and found out that all of the corals on the North Shore of Kauai had a compromised immune system. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is we were stumped until about a year ago. And in that respect, I kind of been crying out to the public on this issue. This cyanobacterial disease that's killing the corals, we know is making people sick. There's a lot of dead coral tissue out there right now. Over half the reef has died. It's not going to be healthy for us swimming around in these conditions. Mm-hmm. And surfers and divers like myself have been coming down with an untold amount of different diseases and infections that we haven't been able to explain. And so I kind of reached out to the public. And I posted stuff on Facebook, and it went around the world. I've done over 30, or actually 76 news stories on it. And then all of a sudden, I got a contact from this chemical engineer, and I didn't know Stuart at the time. And he just blanketly says, I know exactly what's killing your reefs, and I can prove it. And I said, my ears are open. And Stuart actually flew out to Kauai, went diving with me, and I'll introduce Stuart here in a minute just for a little bit of his background and how much that he has studied. He's one of the most knowledgeable guys on planet Earth on electromagnetic radiation and how that affects living systems.
Yes, Stuart, you told me that's your hobby, studying this, huh?
Yeah, it was a strange hobby, and I just did it as a... kind of a relaxing sort of, you know, break from my daily grind of engineering. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how long have you been?
Yeah, Stuart. You know, why don't you tell the folks how much a little bit about your background and experience, because Stuart has a blog, by the way, that's followed by 80 countries.
Yeah,
the top scientists that follow his work on the effects of this electromagnetic radiation.
Yeah, so let me give you just a little background. So I've been doing, I'm a chemical engineer, but worked in industry for 28 years now with power customers, forest industries customers, and I do a lot of work in the southeastern U.S. and along coastline. And a lot of the, most of the projects involve environmental, whether it's, you know, air and water permits or effluent dumping into the rivers or the ocean. So I'm very much in tune with what's going along on the waterway. And in 2012, about the same time Terry was starting to notice disease in his area, I started in Google Earth in the evenings, I didn't do this as part of my day job, spotting diseased fish and marine life along the coastline. I was actually spotting teens, and luckily, the Department of Wildlife in Florida keeps a database, and they log in. And I mean, Florida's like the Venice of the Americas. Everybody's got water in their backyard. So people call in and say, I've got 500 dead fish in my backyard. You can now get rid of them. And so I was mapping that, and I was doing it for 4 or 5 months. And I kind of have a little research blog, but I thought it would be fun just to put my research online without paying to have it published. And a researcher from one of the universities down here came on and said, hey, I've been following your maps. He said, you got all the data, why don't you run some statistics? Because I was noticing that the fish appeared to be dying in clusters.
Excuse me, clustered formations? Yeah, formations, is that what you said?
No, locations around these towers,
locations.
And I'm talking 1,500,000 dead fish over a few years, multiple years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I visually was saying, now, why are these fish dying in these areas? And I happened to be monitoring the weather, because I also noticed that the fish appeared to be dying more after storms. And the conventional thinking is possibly it's runoff from the land, like nitrogen and fertilizer. But I had the weather radar maps turned on in Google Earth. So it downloads the Doppler radar profile. And what visually jumped out at me is it appeared visually that the fish were dying more often around radar stations. And these are high power, high gain, pulsed weather radars, which immediately concerned me, because I first off said, why should that be happening and is it really happening? So the researcher helped me run some statistics, and I downloaded the whole database from the Department of Wildlife, and I ran some stats, and it was coming up with p-values of less than 0.001, which basically implied there was a strong correlation. And it so happened that the largest disease area in Florida is the Indian River Lagoon, which is right beside Cape Canaveral and Patrick Air Force Base, and there happens to be 17 high-power, high-gain microwave radars and earth stations in the area, right around the salt water, and that lagoon's brackish water. So I became concerned, and so I sent off some emails, and in this is 2013 now, and then early 2014, sent off some emails, and got some contacts back, and some interest from the scientific community. So that launched a health research study, and I've built up a database of about 2,000 radar stations and 8,000 satellite earth stations. These are your high gain, high power antennas that either pulse radiation into the atmosphere, or they send a beam of radiation up to a satellite for broadcast communications.
And Stuart, let me intermix here for just a second here, just to tie it into the timeline here in Kauai, because it was in 2012, in August, we started seeing the corals along the North Shore of Kauai starting to die. By September, 1 month later, in 2012, we had a 10 to 20% disease rate up and down the coastline. Since then, we've had the biggest die-off of any coral reef ever documented in the Pacific Ocean. Well, when I first met Stuart, he asked me for that timeline of when all of our reefs started to die. And sure enough, he came up with this data. I think, Stuart, if I remember right, you said it was from the NASA data bank. But he came up with the data showing that during that same time frame, they altered and changed the frequencies of our microwave towers here in Kauai and North Shore for the use of military warfare. So,
it's a military base, so they've had radar stations for quite a while. Now, they added a large station in 2011. Prior to that, in 2005, 6, 7, they added additional radars. So they've been upgrading and adding for the past decade. They added a big one in 2011. And I know your disease started in 2012. Now, the other thing going on is you have RIMPAC offshore every 2 years. And basically, the new warships are nothing but traveling radar stations and, missile platforms. So your average warship today has 50 to 100 antennas and radars on each warship.
And don't they float even some of these antennas out in the water offshore here, Stuart?
Yeah. So you have an electronic warfare facility, and most of that information isn't even public. So I couldn't tell you. I think that was, mid-2000s is when most of your electronic warfare sites popped up, and they noticed that they could use microwave radars for weapons. So, if you focus enough power, you can cook things, basically.
And
I grew up on a farm in Maine, and I used to take a magnifying glass. I'm not proud of it, but I'd cook ants on the porch using sunlight, right? So it's the same same deal.
And Stuart, why don't you explain just briefly, because when people, you know, out there, you know, we can't see microwaves, and, you know, microwaves are electromagnetic radiation that flows through the air, similar to electricity through a power line. Explain to the people how much intensity of microwaves they use along Kalalau versus like a cell tower or a smart meter or something like that.
Yeah, so, you know, your cell towers vary, and of course they've been upgrading cell towers in the last few years and adding more wattage, but they might be 20,000 watts to 50,000 watts per tower. A lot of these big military radar stations are 1 to 3 million watts, but they pulse them on and off, and some of them a couple hundred times a second, up to 1,000. So the power, the impulse power, the individual pulses are, you know, thousands of times or at least hundreds of times greater. And you just happen to have the highest concentration probably in the world up there on the northwest shore of Kauai.
We have the highest in the world.
Yeah.
Concentration.
You know, I've gone through the public domain of all the stations I can find, and I would say for sure you've got the highest microwave power density of any place in the world.
And Stuart, I want to bring something up here, and Stuart, and I'll let you kind of explain what you think happened from a chemical engineering, you know, and physics standpoint. But before I met Stuart, when I was out doing my studies here right offshore, and I was diving, and I was down about 30 feet deep, and I was holding on to the reef with my left hand to shoot video of this dying coral with my right hand. Well, when I was diving, I happened to be diving about 50 or 500 yards away from one of the military warships right off the coast out here. And while I was holding on to the reef, we later on found out I had a massive heart seizure. And it was an upper body contraction, like I was electrocuted. I barely made it back to shore. They medevaced me, or ambulance, to Lihue and pronounced me dead. They said, there is no way, Mr. Lilly, that you can possibly live, and they wanted in Lihue to give me my last rites. And then I kept living and kept living. No one could figure it out. Well, they finally got in touch with Straub Hospital in Honolulu, and they medevaced me over there on a helicopter. My heart was twisted 100% backwards, and it clogged off every artery. They gave me so much morphine to barely keep me alive. It turned out I've been a free diver all my life, so I have these unusual netting of capillaries around my heart, they think, that kept me alive because all of my arteries were completely clogged. And when I got to Straub Hospital, the doctor there said, were you electrocuted? And then I said, well, no, I was underwater. I was right next to this military ship and near the towers and all this. And anyway, they got my heart twisted back and put in heart stents, and I lived, and I scuba dive and surf every day, and I'm healthy now. But Stuart was the first one that showed me how all of this use of electricity here can actually ground out onto the reef. So, Stuart, can you kind of explain what could happen there?
Yeah. So, you know, it's very common on warships. They have RF safety guidelines because it's very easy to get shocked atop the ship when you get all your high power radars and antennas firing off, because the ship, which is made of metal, is a good conductor, and it's grounded to the earth through the ocean. The ocean is a very good ground. It's 1,000 times better conductor than dirt. So you're most susceptible to shock. It's just like you probably heard as a kid, you're more susceptible to shock when you're standing in a mud puddle if you're wet. So if you're in water, or even better, in salt water, and I can talk about that a little bit, but you make a good ground. You basically make a good antenna to receive electromagnetic radiation if it's dense enough and high enough power levels in the atmosphere. And your fish that are turning black exactly match electrical shock damage.
In the same place that I got electrocuted, by the way, the Toby fish out there that are white and black spotted, over 50% of them now are turning black and their fins are rotting and dying.
Yeah. Over 50%?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and if you go on the USGS site, you know, electrofishing, they use that to do fish surveys. And they say right in it, if, be careful you turn the voltage up too high, you'll be damage the fish's skin and it'll turn black, because basically the electrons or the electrical current is flowing along the surface of his skin and discharging along his fins and all. And that matches exactly the fins are starting to decay off the fish and they're turning black.
And Stuart, remember we just did a neat aquarium study with our affiliate that's doing our TV production company in Santa Barbara, where we took healthy corals in an aquarium and ran about a half of a watt of electrical current through the aquarium, and the corals all got diseased and started dissolving. And Stuart, when you came over here and scuba dove with me out at Tunnels, why don't you describe the condition of the reef that you saw and how this kind of fits into this picture?
Yeah, so real quickly, let me first tell you, 10 milliamps of current can be felt on the skin, and 100 milliamps, which is only a tenth of an amp, can electrocute or stop your heart. So it doesn't take a lot of electrical current. If it happens, as it seeks the path of least resistance, if it happens to go through your body, that's when you're in most danger. Now, the good news is salt water protects you a little bit, because usually it's the path of least resistance. Because the salt's very conductive, so the damage may show up in your skin before it, you know, completely shocks you. But it depends on the salinity of the water. But I dived with Terry on KA and Tunnels, and, you know, I'm not a coral reef expert, but you can spend about maybe 1 minute in the water and say something's wrong here, because the reef, I mean, visually looks, I'll say, 80% dead. But the fish are mostly, you know, they're not tons of reef fish like you'd expect over a beautiful, huge reef. And the other interesting thing as a chemical engineer is the structure of the reef, which is calcium carbonate, appears to be dissolving or disassociating and breaking down. In other words, it's disappearing. You know, coral polyp is a little animal, but he secretes and builds over his life that coral structure of the skeleton, and it's built up over thousands and millions of years. Well, something is actually, I think, breaking it down and dissolving it. It's actually suspended in the ocean. That's why the visibility is so bad. And
Stuart, explain a little bit about your microwave or electromagnetic water softeners and how that pulls calcium carbonate out of the water.
So I started researching. I said, okay, the only thing I'm aware of that could break down that much calcium carbonate, and we're talking tons of it, is if someone were to back up tanker trucks of hydrochloric acid and be dumping them in the ocean. That's, you know, thing. So I started researching electromagnetic radiation and calcium, and sure enough, there's a lot of research papers that basically say that. And I can go on Amazon for $200. I can buy a pulsed electromagnetic water softener or conditioner, which breaks down lime scale, which is calcium carbonate, in pipes and heat exchangers. So it's very well noted in scientific, you know, articles and journals that electromagnetic radiation can break down calcium compounds, and so it fits the bill of what Terry's seen, and it's obvious when you spend some time on the reefs. The corals are basically disappearing. They're dissolving. They're going away. Back to the lava rock that was there a million years ago.
And Stuart, remember you found, we were doing some research one day, and we found that internal document from the U.S. military that I found incredibly fascinating. And if I remember the wording on it, it says, for all of the Navy SEAL divers, Navy divers, all of the people in the ocean, this is an internal document from the military. I have it on the computer somewhere. It says, stay 3,000 feet away from these military ships, microwave towers, or microwave floating antennas. Any closer, you can suffer a heart seizure. And we have these things floating all over right off our coastline out here.
Well, and you got 45 warships all parked in a localized area. You've got a tremendous amount of radiation coming off those.
And I remember that. I think it was in the U.S. Patent Office. Remember we pulled the patent for one of those Navy antennas, and it said One of the problems with the antennas is if there's a certain sea level chop, remember that, Stuart, that the antennas will ground out onto the reef?
Well, depending on the frequency of the radiation, and you've got radars from 2 gigahertz or maybe a gigahertz up to probably 20 or 30 or 40 gigahertz, but you know, your cell phone, it's a couple gigahertz, but it's about 3 inches in length. It has an antenna in it. It's about 3 inches high, and that's about the right size to receive, you know, 2 gigahertz radiation. Well, if you think about the ocean, and the Navy has a patent on using salt water as an antenna, as a receiver and a transmitter. Depending on the height of the waves, they can collect and absorb radiation, depending on the frequency. So a smooth ocean surface will reflect more radiation, and a choppy surface will absorb more radiation. And when it absorbs it, because the ocean is a conductor, it actually causes electrical currents. And I have a good simulation from electromagnetic PhD specialists that show for 6 antennas around a warship, they modeled it, and you get up to 6 milliamps per meter squared. Well, that's 6 antennas. The average warship has 50 to 100. So if you do the math, there's plenty of power there that if it's hitting the surface of the ocean, that it could cause plenty of electrical current to shock fish, shock humans.
And by the way, I have up on my Facebook page, just under my name, Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, Lily, L-I-L-L-E-Y. And feel free to review it. I use the page professionally for my work. Stuart sent to me a map of all of the microwave towers up above Kalalau and the floating antennas offshore and the literally billions of watts of electricity used to power all of this. I mean, it's like sitting in the middle of, a lightning storm, and you got lightning dancing around your head 24/7.
Your typical lightning bolt is a pulse of maybe a terawatt of radiation. They're pulsing about the equivalent a few hundred times a second off the northwest shore. And they're pointed up at the atmosphere, but the problem is the way radars work, depending on the frequency range, the atmosphere and the clouds reflect and refract the radiation back to the surface. Or, you know, some of it comes back to the radar dish, and the rest of it gets absorbed in trees and animals and ocean, and it bounces back and forth until it gets absorbed. And, you know, I think, and, you know, I've done other mapping too, and I put it spatially and in time where it looks to me like coral reef disease is ramped up after they installed radar stations. I got one in Keys, I got one in Belize.
How many radar stations?
Dr. Donna, we just need to take a little break and say that you're listening to Health Talk with Dr. Donna Kaplan, the first and third Mondays of the month at KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Our guests today are Terry Lilly, biologist, and Stuart Simonson, chemical engineering. And I have to play this, and then we'll get right back.
KKCR's Wave Rider program will make a huge splash during our upcoming spring membership drive. For a donation of a mere $150, a brief message about your business will surf the airwaves during every two-hour program throughout our 11-day fundraiser. The fall membership drive begins Monday, October 5th, and continues through Thursday, October 15th. Early sign-up guarantees the most airtime for your donated dollars. WaveRider forms are available on kkcr.org or call 826-7774 for more information. Reserve your spot in the lineup today.
Okay, and also in 35 minutes, my good friend Richard, One World Radio, another great show here at Kauai Community Radio. Okay, we're back.
Thank you, Cousin Rich.
You're welcome.
So Stuart, how many of these high-powered microwave stations do we have here?
You know, rough number is around 25. There's probably more, but, you know, I've got in my database, I want to say 23 or 25 that are public, you know.
And then, it's a little island.
And they're mostly in the northwest, is that correct?
Mostly on the northwest. You have
the Nepali
weather
coast.
Radar. well, weather radar on the southwest and an airport radar on the southeast.
Well, then also to Stuart, just real quick, let me throw this in because this is very important. On the south side at Salt Pond by Port Allen, I do video over there and have for 8 years, and the reefs were stunningly beautiful and still are in many places. But at Port Allen, they all started to die horrifically over the last 2 years, and so I called Stuart and I said, Stuart, what the heck's going on? Well, Stuart, tell me what you sent me data on from the Port Allen.
Well, Port Allen has actually that's a high-power, high-gain weather radar, but it did get upgraded in 2011 or 12. They, you know, it was just, it's like polarized, like sunglasses. They can send out electromagnetic radiation horizontal or vertical, and they switched it to be horizontal and vertical. So it went through an upgrade.
And right after the upgrade, by the way, is when the reefs started dying at Salt Pond.
Yeah.
And this thing's, by the way, looking straight down on top of Kauai Coffee Company corporate office.
Yeah. And so what I, in simple terms, what I think is you can't, what my maps, and I've got a lot of them, are telling me you can't pump an unlimited amount of electromagnetic radiation in the atmosphere, with especially near conductive salt water. I think it's grounding out into the earth and the water and increasing disease rates. That's what my maps are telling me.
Right, and you said there are about 25 of these towers, but that doesn't include the 45 warships, and
which have another 50 or so antennas in town. They don't, they've each got two or three radars and 50 antennas or so.
And then there are other radars stations that are floating as well.
Yeah, and I don't know just what Kauai has, but yeah, they come in all makes and models.
Mm-hmm.
And what my maps are showing is a cumulative exposure in an area. In other words, the more microwave electromagnetic radiation in an area, the more the radar's power, the worse the disease seems to be.
Well, let me tell you, too, another thing, just as a comparison, because this is a lot of information. I mean, this is an ongoing study. We just did a National Geographic special on it.
Mm-hmm.
And people from around the world, this is new stuff. And Kauai is the testing ground for microwave warfare. I got a hold of a document that was done by the U.S. Defense Department in 2012. It's 26 pages, and I have that available for anyone to see. And the Defense Department recommended to Congress, of which they adopted or later on, I think it was in 2012, to shift from nuclear warfare to microwave warfare, that they can generate enough microwaves on the island of Kauai and the warships to beam them up to satellites, and they can use those high-intensity microwave beams to basically take out any building, warhead, missile, or human being on planet Earth and replace nuclear warfare for microwave warfare. Well, this is, the United States has adopted this, and the testing grounds is a 5-year electronic warfare test operated out of Barking Sands here right in Kauai. I mean, we're the test for this.
Those five thresher sharks that showed up dead on the beach, they look exactly like electrical damage and electrocution to me. They're thin. Some of them, their pectorals were turned black. The edges were all frayed and decayed off, just because electrical current, it goes along your skin, and any pointed edges, in part, that's where the electrical discharge will occur. And if you look up electrofishing, they also talk about gills. You can actually blow gills out or do damage to them because they're very thin membranes.
And what Stuart's referring to, by the way, for you listeners, because they may not know, that just recently we had a group of these five sharks that are all mid-ocean sharks. These aren't sharks that live close to shore like the white tips or gray reefs or tiger sharks. And they washed up. They were all alive for a while. They washed up all together into Hanalei Bay right by the pier and then up onto the beach. And they were all bleeding from their gills, and they all had their dorsal fins were black and shredded. And so we think that they all swam through the floating antenna areas is what happened.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to talk about right now the health implications, and you know what we already know from other studies and other places that have microwave towers. So, Stuart, can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I've gone back through it. Of course, I'm an engineer. So I, but I'll tell you what I've found. Of course, in the past decade, 10 to 15 years, there's been over 1,000 research papers, maybe 1,000 to 2,000, you know, laboratory studies and all that basically are showing effects from microwave radiation on rats and different animals. So they are seeing effects on calcium, and so they know that there's effects. Now, tying it down spatially and temporally and what power levels, that's been the real problem, I guess. The current standards for electromagnetic and radiation were set by the IEEE, which are electrical engineers, 30 to 40 years ago. Hmm. And, you know, I'm a chemical engineer, and I've taken biology and all, and I wouldn't trust myself to set health standards on, you know, power levels that are safe, and yet the guidelines we have are set by electrical engineers. And they don't deal at all with pulsed radars. They're just an average based on heating effects. Mm-hmm. But what the medical community is finding out is there's all kinds of effects other than just heating, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the current regulation, I could pulse 1 billion watts of power through you for 1/1000th of a second, and as long as it doesn't average over 1 watt per centimeter squared, you're safe. And that makes no sense to me.
The guideline, you mean?
The guideline is 10 watts per meter squared for 4 minutes or six minutes, and it's based on warming you up or overheating you. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really get into electrical shock, which is very common around antennas on warships, et cetera. It just doesn't really address it. So
here's Stuart. Stuart saw this one. I just got to read it right now while you're talking about this, because when you're talking about what the guidelines are, we know what the military guidelines are. They don't like electrocuting their own people.
Yeah.
So remember, Stuart just sent this to me recently. This was just recently declassified. Okay. And this is the words directly from the military. This is an older document. Okay. And it says, comparison of a group of engineers and administrative officials who were exposed to microwaves for a period of years and an unexposed control group revealed a significantly higher incidence of coronary disease, hypertension, disturbance of lipid metabolism among exposed individuals. And it goes on and on and on with a list of about 20 different ailments that the people had that worked near these microwave towers. This document was done way back in the 70s, and it's not anywhere near this pulsed microwaves that they're using here for warfare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the military's got all kinds of documents warning their own people to stay away from these places.
So back to what you were saying, Stuart, about what is it? The guideline is a non-pulsed guideline, right?
Yeah, it's really an average microwave absorption,
mm-hmm.
And it's about 1 watt per centimeter squared or 10 watts per meter squared, and it doesn't address the pulse radiation. There's other inconvenient or unconvenient truths here. For example, and I'll give a real example. You had some shearwater, some large birds, the adults actually, I think they, 130 or so of them hit the ground, in Kochi at the Air Force Station.
Yeah, that was just last week.
Mm-hmm. Last week at the radar station. Now I sent you the FAA document, which gives the safe guidelines for that radar, and it's 1700 feet around the radar, and that's due to heating effects.
Mm.
In other words, that's got such a high gain and high power that it can heat you up and burn you. You can get RF, you know, radio frequency burns and or shock. And so what I've seen in my maps is that, you know, I think it happened during fog and storms.
Yeah, we had the lightning storms and the thunderheads right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly when, if you watch your Doppler weather radar and it goes from green to yellow to red to pink, that's what you're really seeing there is not clouds. You're seeing radiation scattered off the clouds back to the ground. So the more intense the storm is, the more electromagnetic radiation is bouncing off the overhead atmosphere back to the Earth and the radar.
And we know too, as a biologist, Stuart, that the shearwaters, just like airline pilots, they're going to navigate in between these massive thunderheads because of the updraft within a thunderhead would annihilate a shearwater in a split second. So these shearwaters are going to be navigating in between the thunderheads. And what's going on with the microwaves in between those thunderheads?
Well, you know, at or near the thunderhead is where you're bouncing the most radiation off the thunderhead back to the trees and the ground and the radar and any biology that's around the radar.
So it's kind of a channeling effect in those pathways.
Yeah, well, there's an effect called ducting. You can just Google it, radar ducting. It's very common. It's actually more common near the oceans where you get low clouds and inversions in the atmosphere, and the beam from the radar actually bends off the clouds into the ground or into the ocean surface. It actually bends the whole beam. And to me, that's very dangerous. You know, they say they're safe because they're aimed up in the air, but all of a sudden you've got this weather inversion where the beam bends and it's hitting the ground for a certain period of time.
And I wanted I've really got to get this out there that Stuart and I have been working on because, as a scientist, him as an engineer and me as a biologist, both of us have very inquisitive minds, you know? Mm-hmm. We really want to find answers here and we really want to fix the problem. That's what it's all about. It's not about complaining about the problem or studying the problem. It's finding answers and fixing the problem. So when I started talking with Stuart, and he had all the data on where these microwave towers were, I said, okay, Stuart, where else in Hawaii are these microwave towers? Well, he goes, there's a couple of them on the south side of Lanai'i. There's a cluster of them on the north shore of Oahu. And so, you know what I did? I started going to all of these places. Sure enough, at Manele Bay, on the south side of Lanai'i, the reef out there has died and completely dissolved.
Mm.
The rest of the island is fine. And Stuart sends me the info on the microwave military tower there. Then I go to Waimea Bay on the north shore of Oahu. In the last 3 years, the reef in Waimea Bay, which is a marine reserve, totally got diseased, dissolved, and died just like the north shore of Kauai. And lo and behold, Stuart, what did you just send me about the microwave antennas overlooking Waimea Bay?
Yeah, so they have an antenna farm of big high-gain broadcast antennas that are, they're broadcasting up to satellites, so they're the transmitters. And there's 15 or so of those, and those aren't pulsed. Those are continuous beams. And I don't have the history on the upgrades of those, but in addition to those, you also have a couple of high-powered radars up on, a few miles off the North Shore. And I'll just add that my maps in Florida and all are sort of implying there's an area of 5 to 10 miles around the radar, especially when you get groups of them, that seem to be, at least in the marine life, having an effect. So, these radars, they're pulsing, they're actually monitoring, ICBMs over the horizon 1,000 miles away. So those pulses are extremely high power, and they can reach through the atmosphere, 1,000 miles. So, but to me, the dangerous part is when you get a lot of refraction and scattering back to their local surroundings. And I think that, and Terry's done just a tremendous job diving and looking at disease rates, it appears to line up with all the broadcast stations and radars.
Yeah, it's amazing.
If you went closer and closer on the northwest there, I'm curious. Tell me if I'm wrong, but it looked almost 90 or 100% dead as you got closer.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I'd like to talk about the long-term, exposure or even short-term exposure of health effects from these towers.
So I mentioned I've gotten, you know, I sent you a paper. It was on National Institutes of Health.
Right, that was 2011. They came out with this paper. Right.
Yeah, experimental oncology, and it talks about long-term exposure to microwave radiation provokes cancer growth. Evidence is from radars and mobile communications. And basically the recommendation of that study and was that it was a, you know, the conclusion is a recent data strongly point to the need for a re-elaboration of the current safety limits for non-ionizing radiation, which is what this is. And they actually saw increases in carcinogenesis 17 to 24 months of exposure. So it's not...
Right, that was in rats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and some of the older military documents even imply it. But, you know, it's... I think it's an inconvenient truth. In other words, I think it's been there for quite a while as a problem.
You know, Stuart, if living here in Kauai, and I know a lot of the energy healers up and down the coastline, and I've been well-trained for my whole life in a practice called HUNA, and that's basically just understanding bioenergetics and how to channel earth energies and biological energy. All cells, all living cells, are vibrational energy. We produce certain frequencies. Your cells all talk to each other. Animals talk back and forth to each other. We're all interconnected through vibrational energy. I've learned to do that as a profession with the animals that I work with. Meditation, self-healing, energy flow, all of that. Kauai is a power grid. Kauai is one of the most powerful power grids on planet Earth with a lot of Earth magnetic energy flowing up through the island, of which we call mana. It's very important. It's been important for navigation for eons of time. And this amount of electromagnetic frequency is basically vibrating things loose. It can vibrate a cell loose. It can vibrate all the way through to any type of living system. So
there's
so much scientific studies on that, and I follow this part of it almost day by day. There's even a study that we just had that, get this one, coral polyps, that if there's a mild electrical current in the reef, a coral polyp floats around in the ocean, it will not land on the reef and grow because it doesn't have the right vibrational energy.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that people here are really aware of, and the healers here, right and left, are telling me that they're having a hard time healing. They're having a hard time healing clients, and they're having medical problems of their own that they didn't used to have. So,
well, we also have the smart grid as well, and all the cell towers. And
I think it's all cumulative.
Yes.
You happen to have the highest base level of anywhere I know, and then, you know, all these other devices on top are just adding to your exposure.
Now, can you tell me, you had talked to me on the phone, Stuart, about the area in New York that was having increased cancer.
Sure. They've got an established...
Where was it in New York?
It's actually in Newport, New York. It's
Newport.
The Air Force's radiation antenna pattern test facility.
Mm-hmm.
They actually mount the planes, like the F-35, and they test the electronic warfare radars and antennas mounted on a pole. Well, the town around the antenna test facility has a cancer cluster in children of leukemia and lymphomas. And so I got asked to research that a little bit, and a doctor from Albany is involved. So there's a cancer cluster around the radar test facility. It's actually an antenna test facility, but they test electronic warfare antennas.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that the frequency is the same or less or more than what we have here?
It's basically the same. Most of the, mm-hmm. you know, your weather and some of your militaries are 2 to 6 gigahertz, and then you get, you know, your big high-power broadcast antennas are 6 to 12 gigahertz, and so it's that whole range. And just to put it in perspective, a cell phone, I think, is 1.5 or 2 gigahertz. Your Wi-Fi router in your house is about 6 gigahertz. Your microwave oven is 2.5 gigahertz. And see, all those frequencies in that range, they penetrate and they get absorbed by water, and they can trigger electrical currents in conductors. And, you know, salt water, because it's got all these dissolved salts and ions, is a good conductor. And your body has a salinity and is a pretty good conductor.
Hey, Stuart, while we have time here, why don't you give out your web page so people can follow your work like I do, because it's very important for the folks here in Kauai.
Yeah. So, you know, 3 years ago, as an engineer, I started to do the research. I set up a blog, and the address is darkmattersalot.com. The reason I called it that is I was, you know, investigating dark energy that you can't see. In other words, we have a lot of energy in the atmosphere and around us, like microwave radiation, that you can't see. So I've got lots of, basically they're epidemiology type maps, you know, and a lot of marine and wildlife. And I also have some good music and some bad humor on there. But so I'm just, you know, that's kind of kept it interesting to me. And I, but there is a lot of, real data, and I've got the data. You can, you know, I got a Google Earth database. You can download it and look at the antennas yourselves. But I've basically been plotting them versus, you know, disease in both wildlife and human disease clusters that I can find.
And I also want to put forward, I always hate to throw out a bunch of negatives of a problem without throwing out some solutions. Brian Schatz, by the way, just gave the U.S. military $30 million to step up their electronics out at the military base. So it might not be a very good move for the health of people here in Kauai. But there are a lot of studies. We are instigating a number of these studies through some new nonprofits here. And I think it's important for everyone to call their state and federal representatives and say that they have a concern about this and they would like them to support a study about the health effects of the military microwave towers here on Kauai. And you can contact me through my Facebook page because I'm going to be, and we'll be sending a lot of letters to our politicians asking for the same thing.
In the military, the good news is if it happens to be the radiation and not global climate change, then, you know, there's real things you can do. You can move the high-powered radars, you know, away from the coastlines and the high-power, high-gain antennas and get your reefs back. It may take a while for them to grow back, but, you know, that's a great thing.
But we're still going to have some health effects.
But, you know, if you've been exposed to it chronically over time, I think there's, you know, and that's what the research is saying. I'm not the one saying that. There's plenty, you know.
There's a lot of research, yes.
Yeah, March of this year, I think 170, 190 scientists petitioned the United Nations and said, hey, we need to do something about our electromagnetic guidelines. We basically have none. You know, there's no good, clear guidelines on what's safe.
Well, Dr. Donna Kaplan and guests, we have come to the end of the show. And I'm sure we could go on for another 2 hours.
Well, this is such an important topic.
Very, very important. So
we're going to be discussing it more, and you know, in the next months.
Yeah, we got researchers around the world coming to Kauai to help out with this project right now.
So thank you, Stuart, for calling in to KKCR, and thank you, and thank you, Terry, and
thank you.
Always thank you, Dr. Donna Kaplan.
And thank you, Cousin Rich, for making this possible.
You got it. And up next, what?
Go ahead.
We're going to say something. One World Radio up next. And, okay, aloha.
And thank you.
Aloha, everybody.
Thank you. Aloha,
Stuart,
everybody.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Go well, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Town. The merchants roll their awnings down. The milk trucks make their morning.